at the table. You know, look at the other side and go, you know, we're new to this game. You've been here for a long time. You're a big, powerful player. What is it about us that made you want to talk?
Welcome to ProCo 360, the show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. As a listener, you know that sometimes more can be accomplished with the collaborative, upbeat approach we take in Colorado and because of the great people who want to live and work here. You also know that I love listening to great books and featuring them on my Audible list, particularly books that I've labeled as my core stack. These are the books that I rely on repeatedly in my career. And today I'm sort of deviating from my normal format and I'm interviewing an author of one of those books. Chris Voss wrote Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Chris has 24 years of FBI experience, including as lead international kidnapping negotiator. Chris is now CEO of the Black Swan Group, which trains its clients in these techniques for application in business and in life. Now, if I do my part, you'll be fascinated with the approach Chris takes, and you'll love this interview. Chris, I've listened to your book at least three times. Thanks for joining me via Skype.
Dave, it's my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. Colorado, awesome.
Great. And hey, we're going to dive in just a moment. I want to thank show sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs. And MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. And hey, as a reminder, past shows, my Audible book list, and newsletter sign-up are available at ProCo 360. Subscribe to the podcast via your app. Just search ProCo 360. Okay, Chris, you ready to go?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Good. So this is fun. I'm looking at Chris over a big screen with my producer, Luke Woodruff. So this is our first experience with this, and I'm glad to do it. And I want to start with some basics. And Chris, your approach is different from concepts taught by others about negotiating. Your book title, Never Split the Difference, sort of seems contrary to this whole happy win-win compromising that we believe makes us nice people, right? So why did you call your book Never Split the Difference?
Yeah, well, for a variety of reasons. You know, somebody wants to split the difference with he's usually a poor judge of distance. So you got to be careful. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of sucker moves there. And plus, you know, let's roll into that. Never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better. So you're not going to find something better by splitting the difference. You know, every now and then, the other side's actually going to have a better idea. If you determine to split the difference, you're going to miss out on their better idea. So it's the ultimate in collaboration. It's the ultimate in finding great deals.
Well, you also use an example in your book about how splitting the difference would work if somebody had kidnapped your loved one and they wanted $50 million. Would $25 million be an acceptable outcome, right? I mean, that sort of splitting the difference doesn't work either.
Yeah. Like the bank robber who wants $1 million and a jet, you know, am I going to say, look, how about 10,000 in a van? That's
yeah,
not going to work.
Exactly. Right. So also this notion of a black swan, that's the name of your company, the Black Swan Group. Where does that come from?
Yeah, well, I was originally inspired by the 2007 business book by Nicholas Nassim Taleb called The Black Swan. And he derived the idea from the 16th century, when there were only white swans and they thought of impossible events as black swans, like something crazy, impossible. And then he evolved it to the impact of the highly improbable, the little things that make all the difference in the world. So, you know, you make some little changes in your negotiation strategy and it's going to make all the difference in the world. Not big changes, you know. Emotional intelligence, little changes for huge outcomes. So I like the metaphor.
That's cool. And since you mentioned you brought us right into negotiating, I want to have this conversation in two levels. One is sort of overarching sort of key principles that you use to approach your way of negotiating. Right. Then I want to break it into some tactics where you have some stories to tell that can help the listeners to kind of get what you're going for. So starting, though, with how you would look at the objectives of negotiation. I mean, the objectives to win, is it an objective to reach agreement? What's your take?
Well, find a best deal possible, and then make up my mind whether or not I want that deal. Now, I'm reluctant to use win-win in terminology, because what I've found over and over again is somebody says, hey, let's do a win-win deal right up front. That guy's looking to cut my throat. I mean, I over and over and over again, trying to get me to drop my guard. So, yeah, the other side, you don't want the other side to lose. You want them to think this was a great deal. You want them to be surprised by how cool the deal was. So that, and that's the definition of collaboration. Let's make both things better. So, yeah, I want to win, but I don't want you to lose, and I don't want you to feel like you lost. Even like one of my favorite stories from the book, you know, we got a terrorist, a sociopath on the other side, a killer, a murderer, straight out of the movies, Bad Guy, and he lost everything in the negotiation that I coached in the Philippines. And after it was all said and done, he called the guy that I coached on a phone to say, you know, man, you know, they should promote you. You're really talented. So although he didn't win, he didn't feel like he lost. He felt like he got treated great. And the other guy was a sociopath. We used empathy on a sociopath. So, you know, I don't necessarily want you to feel like that you lost. I think that's important long term.
If you don't come to an agreement, is that an unsuccessful negotiation?
No, because no deal is often better than a bad deal. And if you made a bad deal, by definition, you made an agreement, but you just got in the middle of something that might actually slaughter your business. So not getting an agreement is not a loss.
But I mean, does that make you feel, you know, does that hurt one's ego? Does that hurt one's esteem or even one's sense of objective if you go to the table and then you walk away without a deal? How do you coach your clients?
Because you're going to get slaughtered at the table. If you feel like you lost by not getting a deal, somebody's going to hold you hostage over that. And that's a real weakness.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Have you seen that done through your practice where you've had to coach people say, walk away, walk away?
Well, absolutely. I mean, and what kills entrepreneurs more than anything else, you know, there's a saying in sales, not getting the deal isn't a loss. Taking a long time to not get the deal, that's the worst possible sin.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're coaching a client recently that had been pursuing a deal for 18 months. Now, we call this proof of life. And are you the favorite or the fool? Now, our immediate diagnosis is that they were the fool. So in one interaction, we coached them to get the potential client to admit that they were never going to get the deal. Never. Chased it for 18 months. We got him out of that in less than a week. The flip side to that was the CEO was just at a training we did in New York. He said, holy cow. He says, you know, after you guys got me out of that deal, he was trying to do a real estate deal. He said, I subdivided the real estate and I ended up making more money on the subsequent deal. I'd have never found that better opportunity if you guys hadn't got me out of that.
Yeah. So walking away can be your best, most powerful move.
Absolutely, because there's a better deal to be had. Not to make this deal better, but because there's a better deal waiting for you.
Yeah. Now I'm going to shift from that notion to another key principle, which is really a philosophy around your approach to negotiating, which is it's better to hear no than yes. Can you talk about that?
Hey, is that insane?
Yeah.
Is that insane or what?
I had to listen to that several times, and I really appreciate it. But talk about it.
Well, we become hostage to yes. So if you're desperate to yes, first of all, you're weak. And, you know, the cutthroat negotiator is going to sunset in you and just take you hostage over the word and use it to lie to you. We don't even bother with the word. You know, yes is useless. Yes is nothing without how to begin with. But then even better, you know, we don't say to people, do you agree? We say, do you disagree?
And why do you do that?
Because the answer is a calibrated no is worth at least five yeses. So that's an intentional calibrated no. And if instead of trying to get somebody to agree, I'll say, do you disagree? They say, no, I don't disagree, but this is what I need. This, you know, I need this, 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 and this. And like, bang, I got a deal. Or they'll say, no, I don't disagree, but here's what my problems are. I mean, the follow-on data download after a no is all implementation, all issues related, all value proposition honing.
Because if you ask somebody, do they agree? And they don't entirely, but they'll still kind of say, yeah. And then you have nothing, right?
Exactly. You got nothing.
I'm going to remind our listeners that you're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show for entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. Today, I'm speaking with Chris Voss, author of Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Let's switch to some techniques and that you've used in your book that I find really fascinating. One of them is this notion of getting the person on the other side to say, that's right, versus yes. Talk about that in the context of a business negotiation.
All right, so let's go back to what Stephen Covey tried to teach us a long time ago. Seek first to understand, then be understood. So let's modify that a little bit and say, seek first to show understanding so you can be understood. Now, I'm trying to get my point across, and you're not going to let me get it through to you until you felt heard, and you're going to feel heard after you've looked at me and said, that's right. I mean, that's what we say when we're all in. That's what we say when a subtle epiphany has been triggered. That's what we say when we are on the other side's proposition completely. I'll take everybody back to the debates of the last presidential election. No matter which candidate you favored, when you watched those debates, when they said something that you were all in with them on, you said, that's right. You pointed at the TV. You didn't point at the TV and say, you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't even say yes. You said, that's right. That's what people say when they're all in with the person they just heard. Think of the power that you get when you get somebody to look at you and say, that's right. They're all in with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just like any fervent Hillary supporter, any fervent Trump supporter.
Yeah.
You're all in with that guy, and that's what you want in a negotiation.
So when you say that's what you want, I can buy into that. Now, will you help our listeners understand how you get that?
Ah, yeah.
Maybe
you
tell
don't
us.
Get it.
Go. Maybe share an example.
All right. So let me talk about the sociopath in the Philippines, because you know that if I want to throw a hand grenade into a conversation, I'll say, does empathy work with sociopaths? Hmm. So this guy was a sociopath. Now, he had this ridiculous, insane line of reasoning that backed up his argument. And I know that nobody in the real world is ever faced with a ridiculous, insane line of reasoning that backs up their
argument. Maybe not sociopathic, but certainly makes us shake our head for sure. Now, this is a negotiation that you were having with this terrorist or kidnapper in Philippines.
Yeah, well, and I coached the negotiation. I was an international negotiation coach. Hmm. I coached negotiations all over the planet in every market you can imagine. Hmm. All right, so the other side's got a ridiculous line of reasoning. Instead of arguing against it, we articulated it. We fed it back to them in all their position, all their nonsense, plus how they felt about it, plus, and this is the key moment, their criticisms of us. And if you don't include their criticisms of you with no denials, none whatsoever, you can't say, I don't want you to think we've been against you. You say, I'm sure it looks like we've been against you. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure you feel that we've been against you, which is not an agreement. It's just recognition. It's just appreciation. A guy that's into leadership the other day told me, he says, you know what? It's accountability. And we articulated all this stuff to the sociopath. And he said to my negotiator, he said, that's right. Hmm. And all his demands disappeared in that moment. Hmm. All of them. Hmm. It was stunning. It was, my son Brandon likes to call this the birth of the that's right moment. We changed everything in that moment. Hmm. And we ultimately completely defeated the other side. Our hostage walked away. And 2 weeks after the hostage walked away, leaving the other side with nothing, the guy who said, that's right, called the negotiator that I was coaching on the phone. He said, they should promote you. Hmm. I don't know what you did to me, but they should promote you.
Wow. And I think when you were describing this notion of no denying what your counterpart feels across the table, it struck me that it has to be done without any even emotional baggage around that. You have to actually accept that this is how they feel, and that's okay, it seems to me.
Well, and let's talk about what that emotional baggage should be. I mean, you know, what we're really driving at is that you feel guilty, you feel resentful, you're grudgingly admitting it, all mm-hmm. negative emotions.
Yes, yes.
You know, the real misunderstanding about emotions in business is people say emotions are bad. Well, negative emotions are bad. Positive emotions actually help us think better. And we need the mental boost that positive stuff gives us. The negative, you know, resentment, guilt, anger, those things slow us down. And those are that's emotional baggage that hurts our ability to make deals.
Yeah. Now, you also talk about using calibrated questions. And it seems to me that that would come before the objective of getting somebody to say, that's right. Can you talk about those and maybe use some examples, really clear ones that we could try?
Well, it depends upon what your calibrated question is designed to do. And that's why we use the term calibrated, because they're calibrated for effect. Now, we calibrated because we're trying to tease out what the other side is saying so that we can get guidance, or we calibrating because we're trying to make a point. So typically, empathy precedes point making, assertion of our interests. And so to make a point, I might say, look, how am I supposed to do that? The point I'm trying to make is I can't do it. I need you to see it like this. If I'm trying to understand you better, I'm going to say, look, what are we up against here? What's the problem? What's the biggest challenge we face? Mm-hmm. That might be an opening question. So it's a little bit context driven. You know, what am I trying to do in a moment?
Well, you also tell an example about a deal that blew up after the CEO and the head, the other head decision maker were on board, and somebody else sort of came in from behind the scenes and cans. Yeah. So you had said, boy, I wish I had asked certain calibrating questions. Can you give an example of what those were and how that all played out?
Yeah, we failed to account for a concept we refer to as deal killers. And these are the people that are not at the table that are going to kill your deal. And we believe the deal killers are every bit as significant as decision makers. We believe half the deals that get killed that don't go through are because of the deal killers. So the question we should have asked was, you know, how does this affect the rest of your team? You know, who's involved here that this will impact, and what do they think about this? You know, that's trying to take into account the deal killers, the people that resent not being at the table and having stuff shoved down their throat. And that's what we didn't do in that negotiation.
Yeah, it's too easy to get the yes from the supreme decision maker and not really pay attention to the deal killers.
Yeah, so, the people behind the scenes. Yeah.
So I want to talk about some things that I've experienced too as an ineffective negotiator, if you will. And ask you what for your ideas about that, and also what some special sort of, I guess, entrepreneurial negotiating scenarios. And one of those has to do with Chris negotiating. And by the way, you're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and I'm featuring Chris Voss, who has 24 years of FBI experience and was the former FBI lead international kidnapping negotiator. He's the CEO of the Black Swan Group. And so, Chris, the question I had for you is, when you're negotiating, I've been in a room sometimes with a CEO and an underling. My general sense was in the room with the CEO one-to-one, I would have done the deal. And my sense was that the CEO didn't want to appear weak to his subordinate by saying yes right then. So have you ever seen that, or what ideas would you have to coach me in that scenario?
Well, slow down just a little bit, because there's always a problem of implementation issues. Now, if the CEO has misgivings in front of the subordinate, all right, so the subordinate is a deal killer. He's a guy who whispers in the ear. He's a guy that resents not being taken into account, being treated like a subordinate. Hmm. I mean, the subordinate is a great source of information. I mean, your subordinate's body language is going to be where all the most telling body language comes from, because the subordinate is going to be making faces and shifting in his seat. Because the subordinate feels that your CEO, your attention's on the CEO. Hmm. Now, your subordinate's also got a feel for the rest of the team. Subordinate is a massive source of intel as to what's going on behind the scenes. CEO by themselves at the table is doing their best to look out for the team. But again, their deal killers are people whispering in the CEO's ear. The implementation issues that your subordinate is actually going to be a rich source of information for. So, you know, taking a step back, if you sense a subordinate is a negative influence, instead of trying to roll past them, instead of trying to ignore them, think long term, think potential ally, think somebody who knows a lot that could really be a rich source of avoiding problems down the line, stitching time that saves nine, as they say. So take another look at the subordinate's role and where long term you're probably going to save a lot of time on down in implementation issues and renegotiation.
Now you've also in answering that question, you mentioned you made a reference to observations. How would you do that, and what do you change about your style when you're doing it via email or via letters or non-physical face-to-face?
Well, we like negotiating together. I mean, I hate negotiating alone because my wingman is gonna come in with more insights than I'm gonna come in with because I'm busy thinking about what I'm talking about. And this isn't that my wingman is waiting for his turn to speak. I mean, he's watching everybody in the room. He's looking for insights. He's there in a supportive role to start with. So that if we're there together. Now, if we want to switch to email, if we want to switch to other forms of communication, the biggest problem with email is, you know, it's like playing chess and I'm going to lay out all seven chess moves in one email. That's just silly. You know, everybody writes emails. Nobody reads long emails.
Right.
So if you refuse to read a single long email that comes your way, why would you write one? I mean, what are you thinking? You hate them yourself. So break stuff down in emails. Try to make one point. Try to get to one objective in an email. The table's going to reset anyway. So you should slow down in order to save time.
Now, how about if you're an entrepreneur in a startup or in some way, maybe not even a startup, but feel weak compared to sort of who you're positioned with? I mean, there was a quote that Gandhi said as a negotiator. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one.
I don't know. Gandhi might be a good negotiator too.
Gandhi actually said, as a negotiator, no offered from the deepest conviction is better than yes merely uttered to please. And of course, that's something I wanted to ask you about anyway, because oftentimes people will say yes rather than no, and it makes it really challenging to negotiate.
Well, you know, Gandhi gave you another definition of a counterfeit no. The yes uttered merely to please. So there's three kinds of no: commitment, confirmation, and counterfeit. And this yes uttered merely to please is so replete in all societies, and that's where deals fall apart. You know, merely to please, that means you're not going to get any implementation. The other side is going to be backed into a corner. I mean, it's a great observation on a human dynamic from, you know, one of the greatest leaders of all time. I love it.
Yeah. And so what you shared earlier is that our objective is to get the sincere buy-in that's right versus yes at a superficial level.
Exactly. Yeah, well put.
All right. Well,
that's
now, good. Now, that's right. Hey, I did it. So
well done.
Yeah, thank you. So getting back to, I did find this this quote, and it was something about Winston Churchill: "You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth." And I think, you know, a lot of times entrepreneurs feel that way. They're going up to raise money. They're trying to get a key customer. How do you think about negotiating when you feel powerless relative to who you're working with?
Yeah, you're taking yourself hostage. I mean, you know, we used to always say there's always leverage. If they're talking to you, you got leverage. If they're communicating with you, if they're involving you in a communication whatsoever, you got leverage. You might have a thread, but a thread is going to be all you need. You know, you're pulling a thread gently. You always approach leverage with a gentle approach anyway. I mean, why would you want to be heavy-handed? It's not in your interest. So you feel powerless in an interaction. There's a reason you're at the table. Instead of showing up and pitching your value proposition, find out why you're at the table first. It's going to save you a lot of time because then it refines your value proposition. look at the other side and go, we're new to this game. You've been here for a long time. You're a big, powerful player. What is it about us that made you want to talk? What is it? This is crazy.
Wow, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Tease out your value proposition before you proceed.
Mm-hmm.
You got a value proposition that's got 7 points. Which two of those seven matter to the other side?
Mm-hmm.
Because every moment spent on pitching the other five is an utter waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, yeah. And actually degrades the power two that you had.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
That's two. I might get to three yet. That's great. Hey, I wanted to ask you about another favorite quote about negotiating and get your take on this. Mark Twain said, "Never argue with stupid people. They'll drag you down to their level and then beat you with experience."
Well, and then to begin with, I mean, who do you want to argue with? I'll refer to my son because he's my director of operations and actually our chief negotiator. And I think he likes to quote Reagan saying, if you're arguing, you're losing.
Hmm.
So if you're arguing at all, you're losing. And that should cause everyone to rethink the entire take on negotiations. If you're trying to make a negotiation by making an argument, you're losing. And you're the fool in the game, and you don't know it. You're wasting your time. You're spinning your wheels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even one of my favorite shows is a show called Suits. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Harvey Specter is a hard-hitting attorney. He says, I could agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. So this notion, even whether it's overt or whether it's subliminal, this notion of being combative, right? That's just problematic in any negotiation, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Now, let's draw a fine distinction. You can be assertive without being combative. And we call those people straight shooters.
Hmm.
And everybody loves a straight shooter. What's a straight shooter? Somebody that can tell you the truth without being a jerk about it, but they still tell you the truth. They still find a way to let you know where they're coming from, to let you know what they need, without name calling, without using a tone of voice that somehow stings just based on their tone of voice.
But that takes tons of prep, doesn't it?
It takes practice less than most people think.
Hmm.
You can become a straight shooter pretty quickly if you just work at it for a short period of time.
Wow. Well, I want to wrap our interview. And by the way, listeners, if you want to learn more about Chris Voss, I do encourage you to read Never Split the Difference. It's awesome. I use it on Audible, which I've really loved the tone and the voice tone of it, just really entertaining. The other is you can find more about Chris at blackswangroupltd.com. And
it's not Black Swan Group. It's blackswanltd.com.
Thank you for the correction. And you've got a great blog that I read as well. It comes out, I don't know, weekly or something, but I really enjoy that. So well done, Chris. And I've got one more question I want to wrap up. You said in one of those recent blogs that every interaction is an opportunity to educate yourself. Win or lose, get the outcome you wish or not, it's an opportunity to educate yourself. What's that about for you?
I want to help people subscribe to that blog too, if I may.
Fire away.
So a quick way is via text. Send the word, all one word, FBI empathy. Don't let your spell check autocorrect it, put a space in there. It's got to be all one word together. Send a text to 22828, FBI empathy to 22828. Now, what you asked me about is always look to educate yourself. Negotiation is an information gathering process. If you engage in a negotiation and you haven't discovered two or three things in that negotiation that were new to you that you didn't know, you fail.
Hmm.
You should always be looking to gather information at the table. Some people are horrified at that thought. They don't want to be surprised by anything. You're cutting yourself out from better deals because there's some pieces of information you can only get at the table.
Hmm.
And those are going to be the game changers. So if you're not writing down things that you've discovered, black swans, if you will, tiny little pieces of information that would change everything, you're losing. You got to gather information at the table. You got to discover.
So going into a negotiation, looking for new information is a whole different frame of mind than going prepared to do the deal from your terms.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, because you're hiding stuff. If you think they're not, you're kidding yourself. You got to find out what they're hiding.
Well, I guess that's the phrase we're going to use to wrap it up. You got to find out what they're hiding. So, but thank you so much. I'm going to wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, I've been speaking with Chris Voss, author of Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Check out his book. It's really fantastic. You can also check him out via the website at blackswanltd.com. Chris, thank you for your insights. What a great conversation. It's been a treat.
Dave, that was awesome. Thank you for having me on.
It's my pleasure. And to my listeners, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360. This is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app and reviewing the show. Please review the show. And by subscribing to the ProCo 360 newsletter. Thanks again to show sponsors MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones and Keller. And to my producer, thanks Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Search ProCo360. Thanks for listening and thanks for sharing.